Good afternoon. Today is Friday, February the 6th, 37th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon is Eureka City Manager Greg Sparks. Hey, Guy.
Hello, Brian.
It's a blue day today, huh?
It's starting to get that way.
Yeah, well, the soda and the clothes. I mean, there was a little bit of sunshine out there, wasn't there?
You know, it wasn't too bad after a couple good days of rain.
We'll talk a little bit about how the city of Eureka has reacted to the rain and what some of the anticipation is building for this weekend. More rain. But we'll talk about it when we come back.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
St. Bernard's has openings for new children in our preschool and pre-kindergarten classes. Hi, I'm David Sharp, president of St. Bernard's Catholic School. St. Bernard's Early Childhood Education Center, license number 12540-2277, offers preschool and pre-kindergarten. We're open year-round from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call us at 443-7705 to schedule a visit.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Eureka City Manager Greg Sparks. But before we do, our quote this afternoon. Do you want something heady? That's a little too heavy for me.
Better keep it light on a Friday.
All right. Nicholas Beloy, sometime between 1636 and 1711. Quote, sometimes a fool makes a good suggestion.
I've been known to make one or two.
Go with that one. Just kind of let it sit there, right? Yeah. Well, it's been a kind of an interesting week, certainly for Eureka. We had the rains, and as I coming into the studio this afternoon, congratulations. I don't know if I can recall a storm that had anything similar to this rainfall that didn't have the puddle at the bottom of Booner Hill flooded out across the whole street. I don't know what you guys did, but they did something magical this time.
You know, I did a little bit of driving around in the rain just to check on a few things, as I did, a couple months ago when we had that big rain in December. And it seemed like we had a lot more flooded intersections. Well, we did have a lot of flooded intersections in December with that heavy rain, and that didn't see the same level this time. Maybe it was just a little lower intensity during but it sure stayed pretty constant there for a while.
Yeah, no kidding. I guess the water treatment center or facility was taking it and processing it all okay?
Yes, haven't heard of any problems in that regard.
I see. It's one of those, everything's good until.
That's about right.
That call is made, yeah.
You always know when when there's a problem.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you kind of, are you going to, the goofy hotel across from the bowling alley?
The Blue Heron.
It's probably been called half a dozen different things over the years.
I'm sure.
And probably not as complimentary as that. Now that the folks are out of there, and I guess the squires are now walking away from it, is that the status?
Well, that remains to be seen exactly what happens. But I think certainly as this has unfolded, kind of the background history, you know, back in December of 2013, the city council approved an ordinance that really to deal with problem hotels where we have significant calls for service.
Well, and there have been a lot of them before you guys came to town, you and Mary, across from the Red Lion, the turn that was there.
Mm-hmm.
Triangle, I think is what it was called. Oh, it made this place look good.
Is that right?
And that was the first thing you saw coming into town.
Uh-huh.
Was a hotel like that. You went, what's going on? And you got a couple of them that are on the main drag on 4th Street coming mm-hmm. in that are still questionable.
Right.
And then you got this facility, which is kind of like the welcome sign coming the other direction.
You know, and that's and the thing the council was trying to get at the time when they passed this ordinance was to deal with those hotels where there's that inordinate amount of calls for service. And so part of the thing with the ordinance was to track those calls for service for a period of time. And what we found with the Blue Heron, which was, since the worst of our worst, was that, there's only, like, I think 15 rooms in the facility. It's like, it represents about 1% of total hotel rooms in Eureka, but it was represented 11% of the calls for service. So by and large, very than the second place one in terms of the number of times police were called there for fights and other type of criminal type activity at the hotel. So we went in about a week and a half ago and basically gave notice that we would be shutting it down and citing the ordinance provisions. The result of that was that we had residents there come in and file claims against the city. We had, I think, about six of those that came in, as well as the owners, alleging certain violations of, I'm not sure, civil rights, whatever. But then we follow that up this week with actually going in and closing down the facility. But and ahead of that, this wasn't just the city going out, in a sense, with the police department posting the notice. We worked very closely with County Department of Health and Human Services and matching up resources to get to find these people home, so that we aren't just expecting them to go out camping in the marsh.
Yeah, so they weren't just turned out, they were relocated?
We worked very hard to make sure everyone had some other place to go to. In some cases, they may or may not have availed themselves of those services.
With this facility and the situation that it was in, my understanding is that there were a lot of code violations there as well?
That's really kind of, for us, is the next steps in this process, and we will be meeting on that staff-wise and advising council, but now that we've gone in, we've closed it, we've secured it, now it's a matter of going and then assessing whether or not it should be condemned because of building code violations, or what's the cost to bring it into compliance. And that's really where we're at from a next step standpoint. Because at this point, it isn't that the city has decided, oh, it's going to be demolished, or it's going to be this, or it's going to be that. That's still to be determined.
Who's in control now?
Well, this is really, I'll tell you, from the city's standpoint, our chief building official and our code enforcement officer were two, as well as the police department, were kind of our, you might say, the primary points dealing with this. So now I think when we start looking at this from a building standpoint, it really, again, falls back on our chief building official, city attorney, myself. We will be advising council on next steps.
KINS News and Information Times 319. We'll be back with more from Greg Sparks.
Attention 6th and 7th grade students. Plan now to attend the Ideas at Work Middle School Career Camp at College of the Redwoods this June. Campers take part in fun, hands-on projects in high-tech labs, tour businesses, and explore careers. There is no cost for this camp, but space is limited. Learn more and apply online at decadeofdifference.org or call 445-7563. Don't wait. Sign up today at decadeofdifference.org and be part of it.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Greg Sparks. So, Greg, in a scenario like this where the city is having to be involved with a commercial property, what are the processes that have to go on? The fact that it's a hotel, does that change it? Let's say it was a retail block, okay, and you were having some challenges comparable in the commercial setting as to what this was in the lodging setting. Would the process be the same, or are there different approaches?
That's I tell you, and I've never been involved with a in a sense a hotel property that we've had to and not that we've gone a condemnation route. I've been involved in some where we've closed commercial buildings because we felt there was a danger, whether it been partially damaged by fire or something to that
effect.
Public
safety, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, public safety issue. That's usually where you come back on that standard of, is it a health and safety threat? That's always kind of that's standard that's utilized, and I think that's pretty consistent from state to state because that's pretty consistent within the building code, whether it's uniform building code or international building code, that type of language. So certainly, that will be the standard in terms of that health and safety, and whether or not if you had a property that, let's just say the value was $200,000 and it's going to cost $300,000 to repair it, then you pretty quickly get to the point of, well, maybe demolition makes more sense and starting over.
Kind of like if there's asbestos in the structure also.
That's another whole component that who knows what you run into based on the age of this facility, whether you run into asbestos or lead paint type issues, and that adds considerable expense when you start looking at remediation.
Are there different standards based on where the facility is located? Being on Broadway, certainly that is much more visible than being, let's say, on 10th Street. Okay, there's not a lot of traffic necessarily that goes by on 10th Street as contrast to Broadway. The tourists aren't going to be exposed to a potential business relocation isn't going to be there. The property probably isn't going to be as valuable for potential other developments. Does that change anything at all?
You know, from a health and safety standard, certainly that isn't the criteria. But I believe from a community perspective, there's a lot of community concern when you start looking at Broadway and our business corridor and how I've always been that believer, you know, good brings on the good, bad brings on the bad. And when you allow blighted properties to kind of take over an area, they push out the good ones. So it's important to kind of take these kind of things on one at a time and try to either see them improved in some way or take that next step.
That wasn't purely fiction, because there is the old hotel next to, or catty corner to the old Eureka Inn. It's got the pampas grass. It's got the windows boarded up. It's got the cyclone fence.
Yes.
Other than the fact it's not on Broadway and not nearly as many people see it, it's very comparable without the residents. Blight works on both. Problematic mm-hmm. works on both. I think if you did a survey in the community, 90% would think both should either be burnt up or torn down, depending on which your preference might happen to be. Why this facility? Why not both facilities?
Well, in the case of the Blue Heron, it was in violation of our ordinance. And see, this was a great segue, and I didn't even set you up for this, but we did receive our notice in this past, just in the past week, that the former downtowner has been awarded home, H-O-M-E, grant funding for the senior project, low-income senior project that grant funds had been applied for through Danco. So that whole property will be rehabilitated. And was looked at pretty thoroughly by Danco in terms of whether or not it make any sense to tear it down, start over, or to acquire the property and put the money into it. And they made the determination that it was in good enough condition that, and since you know a sound walls and roof and some of that, even though like I say it looks bad from the outside, and that it can be rehabilitated. So we're certainly looking forward to that project, and that will be a nice improvement for that neighborhood.
When does that one start?
You know, the grant funds just awarded. We haven't even gotten the contract for it yet. Our staff just had the initial meeting with Danco, kind of a pre-project meeting. And but I know they're looking forward to get started, I believe, this summer. And probably a 12-month kind of project timeline.
You know, and there's nothing like having positive construction going on. That lets everybody kind of feel a little bit more positive, a little bit more upbeat about what's going on in town.
You know, I think so. And as you know, I was down in Old Town today, and you see all the scaffolding up around the Carson Block building.
Still.
And of course, that scaffolding is going to be there for a long time. I mean, this is a huge project, but I think when you see that project completed, that will have such a positive impact down in that area. But again, it's taking these things that are really in need of some rehab, and if we, through the city, can help leverage federal dollars, state dollars, private investment to help get these things done, those are the kind of things we like to be involved in.
Kind of like the old redevelopment agency. KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30.
Kind of like that.
Remember the music from your trip to Latin America? You are invited to listen to the newest member of our radio family, 1790 AM, a Spanish-language music station with sports from ESPN and news from CNN Español. If you own a business, invite Juan listeners into your business. For information, call 442-5744 or go to juan790.com. Juan 790, tocando lo que le gusta.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Greg Sparks. So what else is going on here? You're taking control of some businesses that need some control being taken care of. That's not bad. Do you have your committees? Are all those cities' committees full?
Yes. You know, in fact, just at the last council meeting, council did a number went through the whole committees in terms of reappointments, a couple of new appointments, but for the most part, people were re-upping on the various city committees. So, yes, I think everything should be pretty much up to full speed. And
so you don't have any of those that are supposed to have nine, they've got two?
No.
Okay. That was a situation a little while ago.
You know, and there's always a board or two now and then where we may have some members that aren't as active as we'd like to be and try to address that. But I think all in all, you know, the citizen advisory boards, I mean, they do serve a very valuable purpose. They work closely with our staff. A lot of times they do some of the heavy lifting on issues before they get to the city council.
You mean they take the bullets?
Boy, I tell you, if you're on a planning commission or some of the others, you do take a few bullets at times.
I suppose that isn't bad. You know, it may make your life a little bit more challenging as you're trying to protect and defend, but I would think that would be an indication that there was decisions being made. Something was going on. Because if nothing's going on, nobody gets too excited about it, other than, you know, come on, help me out, and then they would appeal to staff anyway.
You know, certainly what I've seen over the years, you know, the planning commission, you know, those tend to be the most controversial issues in a community because that involves involves land use and what goes in next to my property, and nothing can get people in a sense kind of more upset at times than if they think something's going in next to their property that they don't think should be there. So
the city is looking at a general plan update pretty quickly,
yes.
Aren't they? Is that this year?
Yeah, you know, we've been in the planning process for a while now, and we're scheduled it'll still go on for about another year and a half. We just did a report to council, last council meeting, on the economic development plan, which is part of
a general. So how does that one look?
You know, I think we've outlined some strategies that I think are going to be helpful from a community standpoint.
Share.
Well, first, let me say,
okay.
Again, we had a very good citizen task force that I think helped vet some of these things out because, you know, it's easy for bring consultants in and say, well, yeah, we've seen this work in this community, but to have some local business industry type folks who can kind of vet that out, I think is very helpful, and that certainly occurred. But, you know, really, again, it kind of pointed out what's happening just economically in Eureka and our region, trying to better understand that. And then what can we do from a city standpoint in terms of working with the business community to try to see some improvements? And one of the things I know we've been talking about staff-wise, and this came up in the report, is we need a good business call program where we're going out visiting with our businesses and find out from them is, you know, what are their challenges? So what can we do from the city better to, and whether or not you're looking to expand your business, you're looking to move your business, and whether or not there's a role the city can play in trying to help keep you here and continue to grow your business. Looking at a business incubator type project. And, you know, I remember for years I used to think, well, that was just kind of the latest fad. Business incubator has been around a long time. I've worked in several cities that had successful business incubator programs. I've become a big believer in them that, right, if you're looking for the landing the business that has 200 employees, right, that's not the business incubator model. Sometimes it's helping that two or three people get started with a business and grow something. And
kind of like Food Works?
Something like that.
But not necessarily food related.
It can, that was certainly one model. I've seen technology type related business incubator. We had a manufacturing incubator in Owatonna, Minnesota, where I was city administrator, and I sat on the incubator board for about 9-10 years. And we saw some great successes in our manufacturing facility. We had a company, I got to know this guy pretty well. I found out he was a year behind me in high school down in Iowa, and here we were in the same town of Minnesota. And he had a foam business, cutting, gluing foam. And it started off with him and his wife. We got into our business incubator, added a few employees. 3-4 years later, built his own building, had 13-14 employees, and really increased his business. Those are the kind of little successes. You get these, 5, 10, 15, 20 employees that find those niche markets, and they can be successful.
Does a property in Eureka exist that could qualify for that? Big enough so you got critical mass, but not too big so that you're overwhelming.
The business incubator, which was started in, one of my previous jobs, started off in second floor office space. Gosh, we had, I'm trying to think, maybe 3,000 square feet. But, it had shared conference room facility, administrative support, phone system, those kind of things. We had a couple guys who started a commercial, building commercial HVAC units. They built their first unit on a flatbed in the parking lot of the incubator facility. So, you can get creative with some things like that. So, right off the top of my head, I wouldn't know which would be a great place for an incubator, but I think you can find some places.
KINS, News and Information Times, 341. We'll find out what else is in that economic development element when we come back.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka. Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 345. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Greg Sparks. So, Mr. Economic Development Guru, or at least with the general plan, what were there other things, Greg, or let me step back. Is the general plan designed to be an action plan, or does the general plan designed to build the framework or put in place a framework that allows those who want to accept risk, i.e. be in business, to have maybe the sand isn't shifting quite so much underneath their feet. And it's a little bit more known of what they can and what they can't do.
I actually think it's both of those, that, for things like land use and transportation and some of those housing elements, it's about having the framework in place in terms of trying to whether we can improve what we do from a regulatory standpoint, but certainly enabling development. But the other part, as you get into the economic development component of the general plan, certainly creates more of an action plan. So it isn't just, in a sense, kind of reactive. Other things that you kind of noted in there, we have a strong employment base in the medical community, and that's a base that can continue to grow. And certainly as you look at aging of baby boomers, and some of the aging within the community, that's an area where you can see increased growth.
Well, with all the challenges that industry is wrestling with right now, and mm-hmm. we talk about shifting sands, is that a wise one to focus on? Because the future is so unknown at this point?
And I think that's probably one of the things that's noted as well, as it's that is hard to know right now still as we're dealing with what are the changes from Affordable Care Act? And now, what changes might a new Congress at some point do to the Affordable
Care Act?
When or if to the Affordable Care Act. So, it goes beyond just, there's a lot of other medical professionals that are part of those services. So I think that's a piece to look at. Tourism development, is still an important thing to be looking at as well in terms of we had a recent presentation at the council meeting from the Humboldt County Convention and Visitors Bureau in terms of what the numbers are doing. Looked pretty good county-wise this last year. We saw occupancy up in Eureka about 7%. Certainly do when you add a hotel, Holiday Inn Express, that has an impact. And, from our standpoint, it goes beyond just trying to get people in to go see Redwoods. It's getting them into Eureka, staying in our hotels, going to the restaurants, spending money here. And I think we really want to see, again, kind of more that can be done to make sure that we're attracting those visitors and keeping them here for a period of time.
Okay, you brought it around. I got to ask, is there a cultural component to the general plan that addresses the, I don't know, what do you want to call them? The transients, the down and outers, the bums, the hobos, the people that were in the Blue Heron. You can spend all you want in tourism, but if they see what we see, nobody's going to stay.
Right. And you and I have had this conversation, I think, more than once in the 9 months I've been here about that. California does not, in its general plan process, does not require a homeless component, but we included that in ours, and we had a homeless focus group, and we spent quite a bit of time in terms of strategizing on successful programs, and we've really, I think, have created a stronger link with Humboldt County and Department of Health and Human Services and their work with the police department in terms of identifying some of these problems and trying to focus on getting mental health services and substance abuse services to this homeless population. So we're working closely on that end. I know some of us, again, we're going down to Santa Rosa next week to see what Catholic Charities is doing there. The council also has us looking at some type of programs, and whether it's small houses or other types of transitional housing. But right, we're very concerned about the large transient homeless population that's in encampments.
Well, if they all move out to the park, it's outside the city, so you're okay.
You think so?
Thanks for coming by, Greg.
You bet.
We've been Talking Shop with Greg Sparks. Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.